I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. Jody, it's just you and I today, and we are here to talk about the homeopathic healing of ARFID. So for anybody who is brand new to PANS, PANDAS, and all of the acronyms, ARFID stands for Avoidant Restrictive Food Intake Disorder. So this is something that is one of the things that can be diagnostic for PANS. It is different than an eating disorder. It is more of like an OCD type of presentation rather than a desire to control what the body looks like. Though occasionally there can be a body dysmorphia component that's added to the ARFID, but that alone is not something that's going to be indicating that it's PANS necessarily without other symptoms as well. So if there's a body dysmorphia along with avoidant restrictive food intake, you are more likely looking at disordered eating rather than PANS induced. And so this is where we're looking more at kids who will not eat a food because they're afraid that they're going to choke, or they won't eat anything because they're afraid they're going to choke, or they won't eat things that are a certain size or certain types of food. They're only going to eat this color or this food, or they're afraid that something bad is going to happen if they eat that food, or their brain is telling them not to eat it and they don't know why. But it's not about specifically trying to count calories, restrict calories, change body shape necessarily.
Yeah.
So Jody, when we got started, you were telling me that you don't feel like you have a lot to contribute here. And I reminded you that you did have a little bit of an experience with ARFID for Avery. Mm-hmm. So can you share what you remember? And I'll fill in the gaps since you didn't remember it even before I mentioned it.
This is I have to say this first, true testament to homeopathy, because it's been a while. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even remember the fact that this happened. But it was really it was a very weird thing for me whenever it did happen. The first time I think I'd cut up an apple and handed her a plate with an apple on it. And she was like, mm-mm. I was like, what do you mean? Uh-uh. Because Avery back then would eat anything I gave her, literally anything I gave her. And she's like, no. She's like, I cannot eat that. And I was like, why not? And she's like, because I'm afraid that, was it that she was going to die? I don't remember.
Or she was like,
yeah. She was like, if I eat that apple, I could die. And I was like, and I remember talking to her about it for a while, trying to figure out what was going on back then. I didn't have any idea what PANS was, what ARFID was, any of it. I was like, okay, this is just a coincidence. She's having a rough afternoon. We're going to just forget this even happened and move along. And then the next time I gave her an apple, the same thing happened. And I think that there was a couple of other foods but for Avery, it was such a small thing for her, even though it was still like alarming and holy crud, what's going on, along with all of the other symptoms that were popping up. It was just really bizarre. And I had no idea why she all of a sudden thought that apples and whatever else it was were potentially going to kill her if she ate them.
Yeah. So it's oftentimes going to be that type of presentation where suddenly something that's always been fine or even a preferred food is no longer feels safe and they won't eat it. And they refuse to eat anything except, a very narrow list. And it's different than food sensitivities and it's different than the sensory issues that can come up with PANS and PANDAS, though there can be overlap. So it can have a sensory component to it, but there's still the specific avoidant and restrictive food intake that you're going to see. Because this is along the lines of OCD, we tend to see sometimes this can be a little bit trickier and a little bit stickier for the healing process. It's not likely to be one of the very first things. Though I will say ARFID does tend to heal before the other types of OCD. And if you think about it, when we're using homeopathy, we're nudging the body to heal. The body is going to listen to its innate wisdom and help us heal the things that are most important first. We always talk about when we discuss things like cognitive healing and the fact that kids will fall behind in math and reading skills. and then it takes a long time, and then just suddenly they start to catch up, and then they catch up quickly. And I always say, your brain and your body don't care about doing math or figuring out multiplication tables when they think that they are in danger all the time. So the body is really good at healing the thing that is most threatening and most dangerous first, not necessarily the thing that's most uncomfortable for you, but the thing that is most dangerous first. And the reality is, kids with ARFID will not eat. So if you go to a doctor and they say, just feed them, they'll get hungry enough, they'll eventually eat. No, they won't. You'll end up having to take them to the hospital for malnutrition and electrolyte imbalances and all the different things that can come when you absolutely do not eat. So this is not trying to get something else. It's not a willful sort of thing. And because it's such an intense symptom, it does tend to respond faster than other OCDs. But because it's also something that's so difficult on a daily basis, multiple times a day in the home, it can feel like it takes a lot longer to heal than we want it to, because we want it to get better now, because we just need to feed our kids, and we need to feed them things that are healthy for them, that to not have the fights in our home, to make sure that they're getting the nutrients that they need so their body can do the other work that it needs to do to heal. So it will come along with homeopathy alone in many cases. This will start to recover. When you start to add in some of the body dysmorphia, we might be looking at places where therapy is additionally beneficial and important to help with the recovery.
Yeah. You said a second ago something about it being stressful. And I don't, you know, Avery's ARFID, fortunately, with homeopathy, went away pretty darn quick, if I'm remembering correctly. And so it wasn't a big deal, you know, through the array of health issues that we've had in our house between my two girls. Having a kiddo that can't or won't eat, like, we've been through an insane amount of stuff. And I think emotionally and like mentally, the toll it took on me when my younger daughter couldn't eat things. So I'm trying to like put myself in the shoes of a parent that's dealing with really extreme ARFID and your kid just cannot eat or has a couple of things that they're eating. That is such like that one symptom, the emotional toll that it takes is so, so tremendous. So definitely, like, you know, I would encourage anybody dealing with it to get going on homeopathy as soon as you possibly can, because it's just such a toll on your kiddo, their body, you know, you emotionally, and trying to like help them through that is just a really hard thing.
Yeah. And we do have an episode coming up in a couple of weeks after this one in this series on the homeopathic healing of the specific symptoms that are most common or most prominent in PANS PANDAS. We do have one that's all about food sensitivities and food allergies that's coming up. So we'll talk about a lot of the things that go into that. So we're not going to dive a ton. This is actually going to be a pretty short episode because it's just about ARFID. We're not going to really talk about the food sensitivities and the sensory sensitivities in this episode. But I just want to touch on it that there are some aspects that will overlap. So make sure you check out those episodes when they do go live. The sensory sensitivity component for food, that does tend to start to settle down a little sooner. So you can start to get a little broadening of food and reactivity to new things, or to having to have a specific brand, that level of restrictive eating, that can start to ease up. And we can start to see a broader acceptance of foods. It often isn't going to go just like boom, really, really fast. It's going to be the process for most people. For some people it is, but for most people it's going to be a process where we see a gradual expanding of what they're willing to eat. So a gradual expanding being, I don't have to have chicken nuggets from McDonald's. I can get chicken nuggets from any other place, or I can even have chicken nuggets at home. So you might still be eating a lot of chicken nuggets, but you might be able to get it at a specific place, right? You might be able to then eat in a specific place, because there's a lot of overlap with ARFID and other aspects of OCD with needing to have a controlled space where you're eating, or what people are allowed to do around you, or all the things that can be really precise or particular about how things are eaten. That will generally start to ease up, but it's not necessarily going to completely go away. It tends to be more incremental and not just a boom, all of a sudden my kid's eating everything. And then you'll slowly start to see more things being added in. When you have food reactivity to things, that is another component that, like I said, we'll talk about in a couple of episodes where we can talk about how we go about reintroducing foods and that kind of thing and the importance of that. It's important, though, to recognize that some kids can be very, very sensitive when they have the susceptibility to ARFID to hearing things that you're saying too. And this is one place where if you're in the process of dealing with ARFID and you haven't seen any healing yet, this is a really good place to do the best you can to not start labeling foods as problematic because it can potentially contribute to some of that. Oftentimes the ARFID will start out of nowhere. I don't know why you're suddenly like why Avery was suddenly afraid of apples, you know, but and apples is the one that sticks out to me the most for some reason, because it was just a surprising thing at her age to be afraid of. So I'm not a fan of restrictive diets, and I'm not a fan of restrictive diets for many, many, many reasons. Even before I really started to specialize in PANS and PANDAS and really understand PANS and PANDAS to the degree that I understand it now, I was never a fan of kids with any sort of mental health symptoms or diagnosis that they were dealing with or anything that was like othering to have food be something that they couldn't engage with, because food is so prominent at so many celebratory things. And while I understand, I don't want kids, I don't want every kid eating McDonald's chicken nuggets every day for every meal. Of course, if that's all your kid will eat, that's what I want them eating, right? Until you can get them eating stuff. Without ARFID present and without any, I just don't want kids having a super restrictive diet, because we tend to see that if they're already feeling othered, they feel even more othered at special things like birthday parties or family gatherings, if they have to bring their special food or they're eating a different thing than everybody else is eating. And so it becomes a bigger deal when you're dealing with a kid with PANS, because if their body and their brain already think that everything is a threat, and then the person that they trust the most is telling them this thing is bad for you, or this thing is going to make the thoughts worse, it can become its own self-fulfilling OCD in a lot of ways, because it becomes a scary thing because they're told by somebody that they trust that it's scary. For some people, there is benefit in avoiding foods for a certain period of time or really limiting those amount of foods. But I'm just very, very cautious. And I feel like it's an important thing to add in here, just because so many people, we want to blame food for everything, and probably because it's a thing we can control. To a degree, is we can control food. So if we can blame food, then it gives us control over something that we feel powerless while we're dealing with. And we can inadvertently create a new problem for these kiddos and for our families. And having really restrictive diets can cause a lot of stress for a lot of people. And we also almost always see a pendulum swing that any kids, once if they've had a restrictive diet for a long time, and they work through it and they're healing, and then we see the opposite side, and then they're going to eat nothing but the things that they've been denied for a long period of time. And we can have all sorts of complications with that too.
Yeah. I think this is one of the things like that I really appreciate about homeopathy, specifically for ARFID, is that not really in an ARFID realm. Again, with my younger daughter, it was different. It wasn't ARFID, but I had fear of going to providers, a new provider, because I was afraid that they were either going to be like, oh, okay, we got to put you on this diet or this, you know, the I think three safe foods that my daughter had at the time, or you know, let's say the three foods that your kid will eat if they're dealing with ARFID. I love that resilience isn't going to come in and say, no, that's wrong. Let's do it a different way. And that to me, like that was one of my fears, is like, oh gosh, what are they going to try to force me to do with dietary stuff? And so not having to make any changes is, I think that's a positive.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, that's the whole reason you and I came together in the first place to do the Mom and Doc Talk that started just us in a Facebook group and now is on a whole podcast and everything, is because I would go to these conferences for kids with special needs, and the recommendations were so diet heavy and supplement heavy. And I was just flabbergasted at how you can take somebody who's dealing with so much in their home and say, and do this. And also, how are we going to be able to function in life if we have to have such a restrictive diet that's just not always going to be available to us. Yeah. You know, I remember, this is a bit of an aside, but it's just something to think about for people who are in the more restrictive dietary space, because it's enticing, as I said, because it gives us something we can control. It gives us something that we feel like we have power over that we can do. And then it could be taken away, right? I remember when I was on a very strict gluten and dairy-free diet for about 5 years before and after my pregnancy. And I was very, very strict, specifically for my daughter, because of some of the studies that I'd read and making, you know, villainizing gluten and dairy and all the things. So it was very, 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 very strict. And so I had a newborn baby on March 9th, and it was declared a pandemic on March 11th. And then everything shut down here in California like a week later. And I all of a sudden was like, what am I going to do if I can't eat? Like, what if it gets to like absolute worst case scenario? And if they're like dropping MREs at people's front doors, kind of a thing, like, you know, the places that we, our brains all went, right? But that you kind of have to go to with PANS, because while that fear was, are we going to have access to food? Is there going to be a place? Are we going to be able to leave our homes to get food? Will there be food on the shelf? You get to the place like, will my child even eat this? Right? So we have to sort of let go of some of those ideas and some of those enticing things about food, because the reality is we just need to be able to eat food and not be reactive to them, because we just never know what circumstance we're going to end up in that could change the food that we're able to have access to, right? And so, because like I knew if that were to be the case, I was going to have to eat whatever was available to me, because I needed to eat so that I could feed my daughter. Because if I wasn't eating, my body wasn't going to make milk or anything. So I was not going to be able to feed my newborn. So definitely a tangent and an aside, but I do think it's relevant to the restrictive dietary strategies that many people take in conjunction with the ways that it can impact ARFID, that we want to heal our body so it can respond well to whatever food we give it, mostly healthy food is the goal, and that we can be receptive to a broad range of food, again, mostly healthy food. And so this is where we have like the overlap with the food sensitivities and the ARFID and everything, because we want to accept and not be fearful about a broad range of food and not be reactive to a broad range of food.
Yeah. I feel like there's some listeners out there thinking, wait, hold on, you just leave the whole dietary piece out? Like, how does that work? Because it's so important. But I feel like we see so many times that when the ARFID type symptoms correct, kids naturally go towards a healthier diet, like yes, on their own. They lean towards more vitamin and mineral dense foods and healthier fibers, proteins, stuff like that. Their bodies start craving those type of foods. So it's not, you know, leaving out the dietary piece of it. It's healing the body. So the body's craving the food that it actually needs.
It's trusting that the body will make good choices when there's broader choices that are available to it, when we're dealing with the underlying reactivity and or fear. And yes, I mean, if somebody's coming to me and they don't have ARFID and, or anything like that, and that they're just, you know, out of habit making some not great choices, I will say, look, we need to work on getting the diet to be a little bit healthier. Like, let's see what we can do to adjust some of these things. But I never say you can't have this group of foods in, with very few exceptions, because there's nothing that's 100%, right? There might be some circumstances where we would recommend short-term elimination of a specific thing for a very specific reason that's been identified and definitely part of the problem, but it's meant to just let the fire settle down so that we can get some improvements made before we start reintroducing. But we always want to try and reintroduce something if it is safe to do so, right? We're not going to say, hey, just start eating peanuts if you have an anaphylactic peanut allergy. Though homeopathy can be helpful with that. Again, we'll talk about that in another episode. So food and diet is important. It's one of the foundations for health that is absolutely vital, that we are eating healthy foods. And healthy foods can include fun foods sometimes. And it can, people don't always believe this, but if foods are not restricted, you will see people like actually making some choices that are better for them. And it's not because they're saying, I have to do this because of this rule or because of this diet that I'm on or anything like that. I mean, my healthy 5-year-old, there was a time I was shocked because we were out and about and traveling to visit family. And I said, do you want this? Do you want this? Do you want this? And I was asking her if she wanted all these things. And I'd offered her things like pizza and burgers and fries. And I was like, do you want broccoli? And she said, yes. And I was like, okay. All right. Well, then we're going to go find a place where you can get some, like, some chicken and broccoli. And that's what we're going to do. And so it really can happen if you're addressing that, like, underlying susceptibility and helping nudge people closer to health and vitality. There's going to be a more broad acceptance of food and a desire for healthier foods that it just really does. People, it seems like magic, but it really does tend to work itself out because a healthy body seeks things that are healthy for it.
Sure.
All right. So if you're dealing with ARFID, hang in there. Do the best that you can. Understand that you are correct. Your child will not eat. And so you need to just feed them what they are willing to eat. And as they are getting better and as they are healing with homeopathy, little by little, it will start to expand the sensitivities around it, the sensory stuff around it, the fears around it, the OCD around it will gradually start to subside. It is not likely to take as long as OCD, but it's probably going to take longer than things like rage. The anxiety will probably start to subside sort of around things too, but maybe, you know, it's kind of a slow and steady wins the race with us and be willing to celebrate all of the small victories that you have along the way.
Yeah. Speaking of small victories, that's it. It's kiddos being willing to try new foods. And of course, the nonverbal autism situations. Those are my two. We do a lot of, if you're listening and you're not part of our Facebook group, it's Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas. It's a private Facebook group for parents. And we do a lot of celebrating in the group and a lot of talking about the positive things that are coming from the healing journey. And one of my favorite shares is kiddos being willing to try new foods, being able to try new foods. I get a lot of joy and fulfillment from reading those comments and posts about that type of stuff. It's neat to see a kid start. And maybe it's because I know how stressed out their parents are. And I'm like, oh, like, thank goodness they're like eating, like they're trying new food. That's a really big deal. And I just feel it.
Yeah. When we get to the episode on food sensitivities and everything, I know that you're going to have a lot more to share. So if you happen to have stumbled on us with this episode, just know, listen to the one on food sensitivities that's coming up because Jody's got a whole lot of experience. So anything with food, I can understand why that would be something you would connect with pretty quickly because it's a big deal. And when it's a big deal, it's a very big deal. All right. Any other final thoughts on homeopathy, healing, and ARFID?
So I think we covered it all.
Okay, fantastic. And if we missed anything, feel free to join us in our Facebook group that Jody just mentioned. And ask us questions, contribute your experience and your thoughts and feedback as well so that we can all grow and learn together and support each other as we are helping these kiddos and these families recover from Pans and Pandas so they can go and do all the amazing things that are headed to them in the future. All right. Take care, guys.
Bye, guys. We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about Pans, Pandas, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.